Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Know it's been a little while. Glad to be back here with the full crew, starting off with our man, QB1. What's going on, dog?
What's going on, fellas? Glad to be back with the gang.
Yes, sir. Moving right along to the man. Miles, what's cracking, man? How's Teddy look?
I don't know if you're going to say me or Prince. Teddy looks good. Teddy's laying on the couch right next to me, being a good boy, even though he's been biting the hell out of my hands and arms lately. But you know, that's part of the teething process. But doing good. Glad to be back.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff. Sexy Prince, Nicodemus.
Yeah, man.
What's going on, man?
I'm good. You know, we back. We took a little hiatus, but we're back. Y'all might need to stop calling JR QB1 because, I mean, I've been practicing, y'all, this flag football game I got coming on next weekend. I don't know. I ain't going to say nothing, but I'm going to say something. I'm looking pretty good. I'm not saying I'm thrown against the wall, you know, hitting it right where I need to. So, you know, what's moving targets, you know, come next week. So
I don't believe it till we see some film.
Yeah, we need to see the film. We need to see the film.
Yeah, well, I'll try to get, I think we'll have probably someone record it. So.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a good time.
Need that basketball, that Kyrie film. We still been waiting on that. We've been waiting on that since like the NBA playoffs.
Oh man, speaking of that, last night was no joke, man. These guys so bad. Like it was and it's really hard. It doesn't matter like how good you are. Like it's really hard to like carry the team by yourself, and it was just not good at all.
I can only picture your throwing motion though, Prince.
It was bad. I did have to adjust. My throwing motion was pretty poor, but I did adjust it. So it's actually balls coming out faster and you know.
On a scale of Blake Bortles to Tom Brady, where is your throwing motion at right now, Prince?
I'm probably at a
Patrick Mahomes.
I'm probably at like a Tyrod Taylor. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Byron Leftwich.
The wind up.
Oh, man. I know it's been a little bit since we've been on, and that's my fault because, you know, I was on vacation and everything. But while I was on vacation, and I went to Dragon Con, which is like a Comic-Con type of thing. Day after the wedding, me and my boy was like, hey, we got nothing going on. Let's go to downtown Atlanta and just kind of walk around and see everything that's going on. So that made me think of a question I wanted to ask y'all when I came back. What is the place you've been to recently where you felt the absolute most out of place? Start with you, JR.
That's a great question. I don't know. Probably a hockey game. That wasn't recent though. It was my first hockey game. Carolina Hurricanes. Of course they're terrible, so they got beat. But it was a different experience. But I liked it. It was a little awkward at first.
Okay. All right. I can see that. Miles, how about you, man?
Well, I mean, I was just in Mexico for my honeymoon. I'd say just Mexico mainly, just because of the language barrier. I'm not fluent in Spanish or anything. So, I think.
Where did you want the resort though?
Yeah, but I mean, they a lot of them can speak English, but I mean, some of them, you know, they're still Spanish, still their first language. So I kind of wish it was more of like I could, you know, communicate in their language more than, you know, having to force to learn mine, you know, but it wasn't like uncomfortable, but I definitely think it was the most uncomfortable I've been in a place, okay. Even though it wasn't that bad.
All right. Sexy Prince, how about you, man? And once again, we have lost the Sexy Prince in
and the QB1.
Oh, there he is.
My bad, y'all.
Sexy Prince, how about you, man? Well, recently, where is the most out of place you've been in a place?
I'd probably say every time I go to corporate at my work, because there's just so many people like who are like higher in like economic status than I am, and just general. So just it just always feels so uncomfortable that like I gotta watch what I say and how I say it and present it and stuff. So y'all ever seen that Key and Peele skit when Peele is Barack Obama and he's like saying hi to certain folks one way and certain folks another way? Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes. So yeah, that's what usually when I get.
Okay, so since you put it like that, how you sound when you're at work? Is this the same Yinka we get, or do you get like Dave Chappelle playing the the head of
Pop? Yeah, it's comedy? Definitely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just have a dictionary inside next to me every time, so I can just try a new word of the day, and then people are all impressed. Oh my God, I didn't know he knew this word.
All right, well, I'm gonna go ahead and slide off this topic before we get ourselves in trouble. And you know, Yinka's boss might listen to the pod. We don't want to get you in any trouble. We need this money.
We do.
A lot of stuff happened. We can't get into too much of that old stuff because, you know, some of it will just make me too sad with the loss of Bucky. And
Bucky's back though.
He's on IR. He should be back. But the other thing I know that, you know, I know Yinka is happy about is, you know, Adrian Peterson has been back in Vikings news. I know that's Yinka's man, even though he's gone. I know that you're happy to see him back, but he made folks real upset by saying that he was ready to stick it to the Vikings. And I feel like folks would be a little sensitive about that. But JR, I'm going to start with you because I know you had some takes on this. What were your thoughts on what AP said? And I guess your feelings on all that after it came out.
I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, what else did people expect him to say? We all know Adrian Peterson isn't the best, you know, with coming out and saying well-written statements or anything like that. That's never been his style. He's a guy that's going to, you know, say exactly how he feels, and that's exactly what he did. And any player that's playing against his former team, he's going to want to, you know, play his best or to the best of his abilities. That's just the type of competitive nature that Adrian Peterson has. But, you know, on the topic of how fans should treat him once he, you know, comes back into U.S. Bank Stadium, I think he deserves a standing ovation. Just my personal opinion, just because of his contributions to the organization. And, you know, at the times he saved the organization from looking like an actual product that they should put on the field. At one point, Adrian Peterson was the Minnesota Vikings and he was the face of the franchise. So I think he deserves a standing ovation just because of, you know, what he contributed to the organization. And he was the biggest or the best, you know, of the product that they were putting on the field at one point in time.
All right. And on that note, because I saw that Miles had an extended back and forth with some folks kind of touching on he was the face of the organization. Obviously, I don't think anyone would take away what he did on the field. But then there's the off the field component of things where a lot of fans seem to sour on him and turn on him. And maybe that has led some fans to not particularly care for Adrian Peterson or want to cheer for him as a player. So, Miles, I guess, what are your thoughts on people who kind of come to it with that take of, I think Adrian Peterson's a bad person now, so I don't want to cheer for him?
Yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense. I think I got a few really good responses from people. You know, a lot of it was about, you know, I'll stand for him, and whether, you know, you stand or cheer, whatever you do, I won't, you know, people telling me they won't boo him when they, you know, I'm assuming that they'll call Adrian's name and, you know, kind of present him on his own, you know, coming back to Minnesota officially. They came out and said that they would stand and, you know, cheer for that. But once the game starts, they're like, I'm going to boo the hell out of him because he's on the Saints. And I'm like, I can totally understand that. Show the small amount of respect before the game when they kind of present him. But then once the game starts, you boo him, you treat him as any other player you would just because, you know, he's no longer a Minnesota Viking. I thought that was a really good answer. I think that's kind of more of where I'm in line with. But looking at, in terms of, you know, the personal feelings and the off the field issues that, you know, people are treating Adrian Peterson, I think it's fair. I mean, he definitely didn't help himself out with the fan base with the way he kind of handled some of those situations. And, you know, obviously the stuff that happened with his kid and all that's not, you know, it's never good. But, you know, for me, I try to keep personal and, you know, sport, because I think where people misconstrue things, is that, what really it is, you know, your everyday job, you know, you're probably working with people right now that, you know, have done and do terrible things. And I think, but at the same time, you know, whether you know it or not, you still treat that person differently at work than you probably would outside of work. So, you know, I think there's got to be a little bit more of a, you know, that balance, you know, that work-life balance that I think some people kind of forget. And I understand it's a completely different business, you know, being a pro athlete's way different in that sense. And I totally understand that people don't like Adrian Peterson. They don't want to cheer for him. And I'm not going to, you know, get mad at people if they don't. But I feel like some people are going to be a little bit hypocritical where they're going to boo him and, you know, say, oh, forget Adrian Peterson, you know, and pretend like he didn't for the last 10 years help keep this franchise afloat, like what JR said he did. I think people are going to, they kind of forget that and they take it more personal. But then when Adrian Peterson, you know, gets in the Hall of Fame and, you know, if, you know, the fans sour him enough, maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't give the shout out that fans would like him to. And those same fans, you know, to me, I think, you know, they would potentially come out and chastise him again for that, which, you know, there's hypocrisy on both ends. So there's just so much that goes into it. I'm rambling a little bit, but
we pay overall, his salary though, Miles, remember?
That's the biggest thing too.
Like, he works for us, right?
Yeah. Like, people care so much about the money, but in reality, like, he does, in my opinion, you know, think what you will about, you know, Adrian Peterson, the way he ended his relationship with the Vikings and the child abuse situation. But, you know, I'm not condoning any of it, but at the same time, people are so tied up in the money factor of it. Like, we're literally, like, if that money's not coming from your bank account, it's coming from another rich person's bank account. So
yeah, like, yeah. Can I interject?
Because we're gonna let you get up in here, Yanka, because, you know, we're talking about AP. You definitely get the last word on AP.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I mean, when it comes to, I like to think about it this way. This is the reason why fans are so they're so emotionally attached to these things, because they are investors in this organization, into this product that is the Minnesota Vikings, right? They use their dollars, they use their time, resources, all that stuff to, you know, fund the stadiums, you know, buy tickets for the game, merchandise, all that stuff. So it's understandable why there is a level of connection with fans, with, like, when they perceive moves to be bad moves, or they see something that they don't necessarily agree with. So that part of it is definitely understandable. If you're an investor, you want to know that your investment is doing well. That being said, this is the part where it gets a little bit hypocritical, because there isn't necessarily the tie to the amount of money we put into the investment that necessarily is deemed what goes with the players. So we're not directly paying Adrian Peterson. We never have been, and we never will, obviously. Where I think Miles had touched on to it as far as the hypocrisy of it all is, you know, I do see fans, specifically about our rival Green Bay Packers, you know, make fun of them constantly with, you know, their partial owners, you know, doesn't really mean anything, all that stuff. And that's where I kind of make that correlation between, well, you know, we can't get as upset about what happens with the team and stuff, but make fun of another organization or fan base for being partial owners and making it feel as if they more, you know, any more tied to the decision making and where the dollars are allocated.
Excuse me, sir, you're not going to tell me how I can and can't make fun of the Green Bay Packers. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to make fun of those Green Bay Packers. However, I feel like
I understand fun of the
Green Bay Packers.
I understand it, but it is ironic, and it's a little bit hypocritical for us to do that.
They're paying money for the Green Bay Packers organization to tell them that they're part owners, which we're not doing that. And I understand what you're saying, but they're literally paying money to have a plaque that says I'm a Green Bay Packer owner.
That's right.
But Prince. I mean, the problem is that it becomes the same, and it becomes the same mentality. Not necessarily with the actual physical object, but the mentality, because at the end of the day, fans, like I said, they are investors. So they do feel as if they do partially own this team. They want to know that the decisions that are being made, you know, that they helped to create that. The reason why the Green Bay Packers decided to, I mean, outside not having an actual owner, but but give the fans something to like, hey, you partially own the team.
All right. Whereas well, I feel like with the Viking Org, very far off a tangent now and I've talked entirely too much about the Green Bay Packers, but I get what you're saying.
Yes.
Like ultimately you're saying that, you know, we can get caught up in that sense of entitlement as fans feeling like, you know, Adrian Peterson, he owes us personally as fans, et cetera. And I think that goes back to Miles's point about people really getting caught up in the money of it, where, you know, fans very often will get caught up with like, well, it was my money, it's our money, whatever. And that leads to that sense of entitlement. But ultimately, I mean, Adrian Peterson did earn his money while he was here. He was the face of the franchise. He was the best player that we had for the better part of a decade. He's the only reason that anyone tuned into any of our games or any of our games ever made it on national television. So at this point, I'm kind of to borrow from Mike Zimmer. I'm sick of it all. Like it's a silly storyline. Like JR said, what did they expect Adrian Peterson to say? Like, I really hope that my former team goes out there and whoops my behind. Like, no, he's a competitor. He wants to win the game. The end. But anywho, enough about
I agree with you. That was actually where I was trying to get back to. But yeah, without AP, you know, who would the Vikings have been over this last decade? You know, maybe 1 year with Brett Favre, a lot of mediocre quarterback play, defense really not being, you know, top notch until the last couple of years. So, I mean, he did give this organization some semblance of that hope that we continue to bring up in our conversations with the NFL selves. So
we can maybe on another pod, we can have a conversation about whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. But anyway, let's not get derailed and let's talk about the Saints and the Vikings. JR, I know that you've been dropping some tidbits for us out there on Twitter, doing a little bit of research into kind of the history between these teams, things you're going to be looking at. So Saints, Vikings, preview, JR, what you got for us, man?
Yeah, so obviously the biggest matchup is between Drew Brees and Mike Zimmer. You know, Mike Zimmer, he's built up a defense that's been top 10, you know, throughout his tenure here. And whenever Drew Brees is on the field, your offense has a chance to be really special. You know, Sean Payton's a great offensive mind. He's won a Super Bowl along with Drew Brees. They seem to, you know, be hip to hip in their tenure with the Saints, and you know, they have a very explosive offense, and that's what the Saints are known for. They have a really good young receiver in Michael Thomas, who had an exceptional rookie year. Some great wideouts. They added Ted Ginn, Kobe Fleener. They seem to like him as well. Offensive line is kind of in shambles. They lost Terron Armstead to an injury, so they're starting a rookie left tackle and Ryan Ramczyk. Who was a really good tackle coming out of Wisconsin. They seem to be very high on him, but, you know, playing tackle in the NFL is extremely hard, especially your first NFL game. You're protecting Drew Brees' blind side, who is obviously the face of the franchise and the city of New Orleans. So it's going to be a big task, and I think that's the guy they should target. I think they should go right at Ramczyk. They should overload his side and just send blitzes his way. Just test his knowledge to see how he reacts, you know, to those different looks that they're going to give him. So keep an eye on Ryan Ramczyk and how Mike Zimmer attacks him. And obviously, me and Jason have been going back and forth on this. The Vikings have to push the pocket, meaning they have to get some pressure in the A and B gaps against Drew Brees, because we all know his height is very limited. So he's the master at creating throwing lanes. And how he creates those throwing lanes is stepping up into the pocket and climbing the pocket, seeing through those A and B gaps. So, absolutely. Seeing through those A and B gaps. So, that's the way he creates those throwing windows. So, sending guys like Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr up the middle constantly, or Linval Joseph, Tom Johnson, Jaleel Johnson, guys of that sort, just pushing the pocket. So, just limiting Drew Brees and, you know, his ability to climb the pocket, you know, flipping on the other side of the ball, the Saints defense and the Vikings offense. If the Vikings offense can't have success on these guys, I think it's going to be a really long season. They have a lot of new additions on their defense, a lot of moving parts. You know, they're expected to start a rookie corner and Marshawn Lattimore. So I'm really interested to see how Pat Shurmur attacks their defense, since they have so many moving parts.
And Miles, I had a question for you, because JR mentioned Michael Thomas, and I think the general consensus is, you know, Michael Thomas is, now he's the man, he's locked in, He's going to get all the targets. And no fantasy people in the fantasy community are really, really excited about Michael Thomas this year. But I guess I wanted to ask you a question from a different perspective, in that all the attention's on Michael Thomas now, with Brandon Cooks gone, Willie Snead out for this game. Could that end up being something that hurts Michael Thomas more than maybe we think it might help, with him now being really the key person on offense that all the opposing defenses can really lock into and game plan to shut down?
Yeah, definitely. I think he proved last year that, you know, the reason that the Saints were comfortable moving on from a guy like Brandon Cooks was because of the way Michael Thomas played. And we've kind of seen the Saints, you know, move on from receivers before they had to pay them, just because, you know, they've, because of their system fit. But not to get off on that rant, but I think for a guy like Michael Thomas, what he proved last year, I think, which is kind of unfortunate for him, losing a guy like Brandon Cooks, is that takes away another weapon to kind of take attention away from him. So I think that's a big key, because I think, you know, a team like Minnesota, who generally doesn't shadow receivers, with a guy like Xavier Rhodes, you know, he's, you know, probably, I think he's arguably the, I think he's one of the top three highest paid corners in the league. Anyways, you know, we've seen him shadow receivers at times. So I think, you know, that could be part of the game plan that we don't know about, and would be an unfortunate thing for a guy like Michael Thomas, because, you know, if they like to move him around, they like to get him into certain mismatches with, you know, certain teams. But if the, you know, certain teams are shadowing a guy like Michael Thomas, it makes it a lot harder for him, and, you know, take that focus away from other key areas, and, you know, keep it solely on a guy like him. You know, like you said, Jason, makes it a lot harder for him to be as productive. So I think, you know, it's to be seen if how much that'll affect him or not. I'm sure it might early on, and he'll have to adjust a little bit to the way that's handled. But I think he's the kind of guy who has that skill set that can kind of – he catches the ball well in traffic. He does well in press coverage. So he runs good routes. So he's not one of those guys who can't handle some of that. So I think it's still to be seen. But I think overall he'll do well in general.
And Yinka, from your perspective, kind of what are you looking at? Who are the key players that you're really going to be watching in this game? And are there any matchups that you're really, really excited to see as, you know, the Vikings actually start to play some football that means something?
Yeah, I know that a lot of people think it's going to be a really good matchup. Ted Ginn and Trey Waynes, obviously. I think that'll decide the game a little bit more than people think that it will. I do want to see how Trey has progressed in his third year. Will he be able to, you know, exhibit more signs? I mean, Ted Ginn is a good matchup for Trey Waynes. He falls into the categories a lot of things that Trey does well. So obviously with this matchup, you want to see some of the areas that Trey has only ever been at best average at or below average. You want to start giving him above average and start seeing those things start to progress. You know, if not that Ted hits them very often, but if, you know, Trey gets hit with a double move, can he recover quick enough to be able to, you know, be in the right position, being his hip?
Nope.
another key battles. I'm looking at Danielle Hunter. He's facing Ramchek, right? I think Danielle Hunter's up against Ramchek in this game.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see, I mean, Danielle Hunter in his third year as well, he should be able to, you know, he is going to be a full-time starter, so I don't necessarily think he's going to dominate the entire game, but I think we'll start to see more of his run-stopping ability. I think he's actually going to be more of a key as far as handling Alvin Kamara. He's going to be used more, you know, up the middle than anything, where I think Adrian's going to be – he's going to meet Linval Joseph, and he's going to get into the teeth of, you know, best part of our defense. This is our, you know, kind of our interior defensive line as well as our entire defensive line. You know, so I'm obviously looking at what's happening on, you know, the edges, the trenches, as well as, you know, I want to see what that outside corner the other guy is going to be doing. So those are my keys.
Okay. All right. We're going to wrap this up with some rapid fire. JR, starting with you, I need a score prediction and a bold prediction. Go.
Ooh, I'm going to go 20
17 Vikings. Bold prediction. Dalvin Cook rushes for 160 yards and scores both offensive touchdowns.
Damn.
Okay. JR. All right. Coming out party. All right. Miles, how about you? Score prediction, bold prediction.
JR took my score prediction, so I'm going to go 24-17 Vikings. I'm going to go bold prediction. This should come as no surprise. I think Laquon Treadwell has a touchdown, and I think Mackenzie Alexander has an interception.
From the bench?
I said what I said.
Sexy Prince. Score prediction, bold prediction.
Yeah, man. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, probably 17-14 Vikings. I do think they'll be able to win this. Bold prediction. Gets his first NFL touchdown.
And maybe this is on my end, but who gets his first touchdown? You broke up on me a little bit there.
I didn't hear it either.
Laquon, first-round pick, Treadwell.
Sophomore surge.
Got some Treadwell love around
here. Sophomore surge.
Okay. All right. All right.
He's gonna get it, y'all. Just watch.
All right. My bold prediction. I'm gonna go the other way. And I'm gonna say Vikings win 35-28. Sam Bradford outduels Drew Brees. Throws for three.
Oh, touchdowns. I thought those were all special team scores.
No, bro, no. And then my bold prediction is Sam is going for three touchdowns in this game, and Team Sleeves is going to take up residence in JR's mentions for the next week.
And Jason's, but yes.
And until we play Pittsburgh.
All right. Well, I think that's what we got for Vikings talk. So we're just going to go ahead here and get our guest on. We got Roy Anderson from Who Dat Dish. So give me just a second. We'll get him on the line and we'll get this interview going. Here we have Mr. Roy Anderson joining us this evening to bring us a little bit of insight on this upcoming matchup the Vikings have with the Saints. Roy, we'll get you kicked off here with an easy one. Who is Roy Anderson? Where can we find your work, man?
I live in Pensacola, Florida, lifelong Saints fan, and I'm the editor for Who Dat Dish, which is the Saints blog on the Fansided Network.
That's awesome, man. And so from your perspective, you know, what are the keys to this game? What are the things you're really going to be watching and that maybe we as Viking fans haven't really been thinking about or considering?
Well, the big key for us is trying to limit the Vikings offense. That's our big concern in this game. The short passing game is something the Saints have had trouble with a lot. We've got a big revamp defense. We'll see how it goes. They were ranked third defense in the NFL through preseason for what that's worth, but they look vastly improved from last year. That and trying to control Dalvin Cook out of the backfield, that's going to be our major concerns in this game. Him, Dalvin Cook, and Kyle Rudolph, those are our big concerns.
Okay, and then as Vikings fans, Willie Snead's obviously a name that we know, and people were very happy to find out on this end of things that he was going to be suspended from this game because he looked like a tough matchup for our DBs. What are your thoughts on that, and who's going to go in and replace him?
Well, Willie Snead is somebody who is a system guy at this point. He was on the practice squad of the Panthers and the Browns as an undrafted rookie free agent before the Saints picked him up. So although he looks really good in our system, he's another one of these guys who I think might not be so good outside of a Sean Payton, Drew Brees system. So we've got other options at slot. We've got this kid, Austin Carr, who spent the preseason with the Patriots we just picked up. Looks like a really solid guy. Actually, he was the number one receiver in the Big Ten last year for Northwestern. We've also got Alvin Kamara, the new running back we drafted out of Tennessee. He's capable of playing the slot on first and second downs. And we also have Tommy Lee Lewis, his really dynamic young receiver. Actually, we picked him up off a recommendation from Bill Parcells as an undrafted rookie free agent last year. And he's somebody who's just super quick and elusive, small guy, but he can do a lot of stuff out of the slot as well. So we're not limited in the slot.
All right. And then one of the things, obviously the Saints offense gets all of the headlines. And outside of Cameron Jordan, there's not a lot of names that most people know. I guess who should we really be looking for? Who are the guys that could maybe blow up or wreck the game on the New Orleans defense?
Well, this year, I think the big names to look for, first of all, we got Alex Okafor in the offseason as a free agent for the other side of the defensive end. Then we also have Sheldon Rankins back healthy at the guard inside. And we also have Marshawn Lattimore, the first round draft pick. But the big acquisitions for us, I think, were the new linebacking core. And it's pretty much a completely new unit. We got A.J. Klein, a free agent out of Carolina. We got Manti Te'o, who never looked very good in San Diego, but he's looking really solid right now in training camp. And we got Alex Anzalone. He was a third-round draft pick out of the University of Florida, who's playing weak side linebacker. And he has exceptional coverage skills, really good sideline to sideline, fast kid, big kid. He's one of those guys that's got the long blonde hair. You'll recognize him immediately. But he's going to be really key in this game. I think he may be the biggest key in trying to limit what Dalvin Cook can do out of the backfield.
All right. And the last, I guess, scripted question I have for you here is what upcoming projects do you have, and where can the listeners find those projects in the coming days?
Well, whodatdish.com is the website, and we've been pumping out a lot. We have tomorrow we have a big article coming out on kind of comparing Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara, who are really very, very similar guys. They're almost exactly the same in stature, very similar abilities. They just came out of very different systems in Tennessee and Florida State. But I think that you'll see that you'll see Alvin Kamara play a lot. He's going to be that Joker satellite back in the Sean Payton system. And that's just the comparison between those two. It's an Alvin-Dalvin comparison, if you will.
That's awesome. That's all I have. And I guess we'll run through a couple questions here, starting with Miles, go to JR, and then wrap it up with Yinka. So, Miles, what do you have?
Yeah, Roy, nice to meet you. Appreciate having you on the pod.
Yes, sir.
So just kind of things, you know, down in New Orleans, you know, week one matchup on Monday night. This is the second out of 3 years the Vikings have been on a, you know, to start the season on Monday night. The first one didn't go very well in San Francisco, but but anyways, how down in New Orleans and kind of like in your neck of the woods, what's kind of like the perception of the Minnesota Vikings? I know, you know, defense, you know, the defense seems to be the key thing everybody talks about, but what are you hearing and what are you seeing down there? And what's like your kind of your thoughts of like the Minnesota Vikings overall?
Well, I think that we're seeing this as a matchup where it's a really good defense against a really good offense for the Saints offense versus the Vikings defense. Then on the other side of the coin, you're looking at, you know, two maybe an offensive unit for the Vikings that hasn't been seen as that great, and also a defensive unit for the Saints that hasn't been seen as that great. So, you know, it's one of those matchups that on paper looks like a really even bet, you know, and you're seeing that out of Vegas as well. But I think that that's not going to be the whole tale of this game. I think that I think that the Saints defense is improved enough where they'll be able to limit the Vikings offensively. It's the Saints offense has been struggling some in preseason. So seeing how they can do against this unit that y'all are putting out there, the Everson Griffin and those guys, I mean, that's going to be a really big matchup. I think that it's going to be a low scoring game. I think that, but going back to the 2009 the NFC title game when the Saints won the Super Bowl that year and the Bounty Gate and all that, that there's been a relationship between the Vikings and the Saints for a long time. You know, going back to having Monty Kiffin switching back and forth as defensive coordinators with the team. And, you know, one of the things that's a little subplot is that Cam Jordan's dad, Steve, played tight end for the Vikings forever, you know. And so there are a lot of, you know, little tie-ins in this game. And then Mike Zimmer and Sean Payton were on the same coaching staff in Dallas. And they're just a gajillion little storylines here. And it's the top of the Mississippi and the bottom of the Mississippi. It's kind of a fun rivalry, I've always thought.
Definitely. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Roy, this is JR. Nice to meet you finally, buddy. You know, being in such a pass-happy offense like the NFC South, you guys' clear emphasis in the draft was addressing the secondary, and two of you guys' first three picks came in the secondary with Marshawn Lattimore on the corner from Ohio State and Marcus Williams, the safety from Utah. What's your expectations for both of those guys entering this season?
Well, I think that Lattimore has looked really solid when he's been healthy in training camp, and he's had some little injury issues throughout his collegiate career. So I think that, you know, him going forward, the past two preseason games, he's looked really, really solid. He's fast. He's blazing fast. You know, he's got excellent coverage skills. And I think that that he's going to be, well, he's starting from day one. He's going to be opposite P.J. Williams, who is somebody who missed all of last season with concussions. They've been looking fantastic throughout training camp as our cornerbacks. Then you got Marcus Williams is somebody who we've been hoping to replace. We've been hoping to replace Darren Sharper since the 2009 season when he had 9 interceptions, probably one of the better seasons ever by a free safety in the NFL. But we've never had that ball-hawking free safety since then. We tried last season with Von Bell out of Ohio State with the second round draft pick. He hasn't looked like very much. We're hoping Marcus Williams will do that. He's looked really good in camp. He hasn't shown it on in game yet, but we hope that he'll be able to acclimate quickly to the NFL and be able to contribute in that manner.
Hey, Roy, this is Yinka here. Thank you for coming on the pod. I just had a quick question. We are Vikings fans here, so you know we lost Adrian Peterson this year to the New Orleans Saints. So I'm just curious, what do you think the utilization of AP will be coming this game?
Well, I think that he and Mark Ingram have very similar skill sets. I think that maybe Ingram is a little more of I'm not even going to say that. I think that they both have very similar skill sets. Neither one of them are utilized, catching out of the backfield to a great extent. They're both mostly north-south runners. They both have some pretty high elusiveness ratings. I think that, it's going to be a two-headed monster pretty much. And on the depth charts we've seen so far, they're listed as co-starters. So, it's like they're saying that it's basically the same guy with a different jersey number as how they're going to use them. So I think that it's going to be maybe they're going to run the ball more. So they don't want to have somebody getting 30 carries a game. So they're going to split it up where each of these guys is getting like 18 carries a game. And we're going to try to pound the ball more. That's what I'm projecting.
Sorry, real quick. I had one last question as I was thinking about it. You know, you're talking about your worries with the Saints offense a little bit, the way they've looked in training camp and everything. And I know you guys have a couple injuries across the offensive line with, Max Unger and your left tackle. So kind of how are you seeing things come with that? And what are your kind of expectations with that?
That's a very good question because we have really, really bad depth at offensive line right now. But we got Ryan Ramczyk in the last of the first round of this draft. He's a rookie out of Wisconsin. He was projected to come in and kind of learn the right tackle position behind Zach Strief. Teron Armstead went down in training camp with a shoulder injury. And he actually is well ahead of schedule on recovery. So they actually have him on the active roster now. But Ramczyk is going to be the starter for this first game. He's looked about like what you'd expect a rookie to look like so far in preseason and training camp. We got to go with him because we don't have anybody behind him, to be honest with you. The backup we have right now at tackle is Sini Okelemidi, who is a guard. And so that's what we're looking like. So we're just praying to football Jesus that nothing bad happens to Ryan Ramczyk and he looks like the guy he looked like in college.
Right. Oh, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. We're definitely struggling with offensive line, especially the depth. So
that's a question that I had for you guys with the offensive line. You guys have a completely new unit out there. How are these guys looking so far in training camp and preseason? Are they looking like they're going to do the trick?
Well, we'll all find out together for the first time on Monday night because they haven't played. This unit will not have played any snaps together in live action until the game on Monday. So we'll all be finding out about this together, Roy. And yeah, really, your guess is as good as ours. We have our fingers crossed, but we have no idea.
I'd say overall, though, I'd say we're excited about our new center, Pat Elflein, the rookie. He's looked the part. He's definitely looked the part. Our right tackle, Mike Remmers from Carolina. He's kind of struggled as we kind of expected it to be, but he hasn't really looked the part we'd like him to as a starting tackle. Riley Reiff got hurt like the second day of practice of training. He hurt his back, but he came back. They sat him for a little while. He came back. He looked solid in the game, the third game against Seattle. So that was, that was always good to see. I think he'll be all right. He's not the one I really worry about. It's more the right side of the line that you kind of worry about.
Right, right, right. Well, that's Cam Jordan's side.
Oh yeah, we know.
and he knows Mike Remmers very well. So we're gonna see how that plays out. He's that's gonna be one to watch.
Yeah, we're hoping we don't have to give him too much help, but we're probably gonna have to.
Right.
Well, Roy, thank you for coming on this evening and working through all the various technical issues we had with getting you on tonight. At the end of the day, it was a great interview, a lot of great insights. So thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely, guys. Good luck to nobody. Who dat?
Have a good night, man.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Roy.
All right. That was our interview with Roy Anderson. Yes, before we wrap this thing up, I guess anything you guys have upcoming that we should be aware of? JR, Miles, Yinka, anything that you're working on?
Yeah, so I have a Keys to Victory article coming out on Vikings territory on Monday.
Awesome, man. Miles, Yinka, anything that we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I'll probably have just some key matchups to look for. We had a pretty interesting conversation today on something that I'm probably going to start writing about.
All right. And Mr. Gorham, anything from you?
Yeah, I know I'm on the sophomore surge, but I'm writing a little quick article about why I think Laquon Treadwell could have I'm not going to say like a, I guess you'd call it like a get back on track type season in the sophomore year. So I kind of wanted to, I'm going to touch base on that.
I'm going to need you to put some more sauce on it than that though, Miles. You say it with your chest. He's breaking out this year.
Well, because anything he does past one catch for 15 yards for most of Vikings Twitter is breakout. So,
all right.
I'm going to temper expectations, but at the same time, I'm going to say, he's going to get back on track to being on his way.
Hey, Sexy Prince.
I remember the name of the art. We talked about. I actually found the tweet. We talked about character concerns and how that's hasn't become the focal point anymore, or at least like the number one.
Man, that's not what I'm asking you about. We know about that one. You know that's not what I'm asking about.
Jason, clearly I'm trying to distract you.
Oh, just like that. Yo, Yinka, we started talking about the Teddy article and Yinka hung up on us. So I think that's our sign.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Yinka done hung up when we started talking about this Teddy article. He was working up for 6 weeks. So as always, thanks for coming out. Kick it with us here on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. I was joined this evening by JR Miles and Saxy. One of these days, I'm going to write my article about Teddy Prince. Thanks for coming out, y'all. Good night.